ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 10, text number 24. Translation, O dear friends, here is that very personality of Godhead whose attractive and confidential pastimes are described in the confidential parts of Vedic literature by his great devotees. It is he only who creates, maintains, and annihilates the material world and yet remains unaffected. Srila Prabhupada's purport. As is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, all the Vedic literatures are glorifying the greatness of Lord Sri Krishna. Here it is confirmed in the Bhagavatam also. The Vedas are expanded by many branches and sub-branches by great devotees and empowered incarnations of the Lord, like Vyas, Narada, Shukadev Goswami, the Kumaras, Kapila, Prahlad, Janaka, Bali, and Yamaraj. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam especially, the confidential parts of his activities are described by the confidential devotee Shukadev Goswami. In the Vedanta Sutras or Upanishads, there is only a hint of the confidential parts of his pastimes. In such Vedic literatures as the Upanishads, the Lord has expressively been distinguished from the mundane conception of his existence. His identity being fully spiritual, his form, name, quality, and paraphernalia, etc., have been elaborately distinguished from matter, and therefore he is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent persons as impersonal. But factually, he is the Supreme Person, Bhagavan, and he is partially represented as Paramatma, or impersonal Brahman. Savayam sakyanugita satkato vedeshu kuhyeshu chakuyavadibihi Ya eka isho jagadatma lilaya srijatya vatyati na tatra sajjate. Ya eka isho jagadatma lilaya ananda chinmaya rasatmataya manasu ya praninam pratipalam smarutem petya lilayatena bhuvanani jayatya jastram govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. This sense of the verse in the Sri Brahma Samhita, in which Brahma is saying that the Lord's pastimes are all victorious in this world. They dominate the minds of those who recollect his pastimes because they're of a superior nature. And in this purport, Srila Prabhupada's mentioning how the Upanishads begin to inform those who are in the human form of life and who have an inkling for the fact that there's something more than just the variety of the material world. In fact, human form of life is specifically meant to have this feeling, this impetus. It is natural in the human form of life, atato brahma jignasa, to have this feeling of inquiry that I can do more. The feeling is I can do anything. That's why human beings have a tendency to try everything. Otherwise, why do human beings build spaceships and try to go high in the air or dive deep into the water and go to the bottom of the ocean or climb mountains and all so many things? There's a sense in the human form of life of being unlimited, that actually I have potential to do practically everything, anything that's there naturally within the soul, which is now coming to a juncture where he feels some freedom. He feels his actual nature. So this inquiry and the ability to inquire and the impetus to inquire, atato brahma jignasa, what is the greatest thing? What Brahman means the greatest. Is encouraged by the Vedas and by the instruction of the Upanishads were guided to this understanding that I'm not part of this world. However, in doing so, because it's at an entry level, there's a tendency for those without good guidance to misunderstand the Upanishads and think that I'm God. Like unto the sun, as am I. So someone reads that and says, oh, that means I am the sun. I'm God. Because the Vedas say, look and see what you are. You're Brahman. So Brahman means I'm the greatest. So I'm God. So there's a mistake there. But through further guidance, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mentioned this verse, it says that what is mentioned in the Upanishads is far away from the feeling that one has when one's liberated in actual spiritual life, where one's heart melts and one becomes attracted to the personal feature of the Lord. Evam vratasva priyanamakirtya, that's not the verse, but this is related to it. Evam vratasva priyanamakirtya jatanurago jita chuta uchar. When one becomes guided properly towards approaching the personal form of the Lord, then the natural thing is that one's heart should melt. And one will feel an inclination and an attraction towards the personality of the Lord, the actual personal form of the Lord, in a relationship. And in this verse, it's such a... all these verses that are being spoken by these ladies on the top of they're on a balcony and they're looking out and they're seeing Krishna as he's departing for Dwarka. And they're talking amongst themselves. And as we talked about in previous classes, what's spoken by the devotees, Machita Makata Prana Bhurayanta Parasparam Katayantashtamam Nityam Tushanti Charamantita. It's very fulfilling and satisfying because it's spoken from the hearts of devotees whose hearts are melted already. And therefore, they can reveal Krishna to others. And just in their comments to each other, this indicates this verse, or the verse in the Bhagavad Gita indicates this kind of a setting where the devotees, the pure devotees of the Lord, are talking amongst themselves. And what is the subject of their conversation? It's Krishna. They're thinking about Krishna, talking about him in a very intimate way. And therefore, Sakhi means, oh, friend. They're talking amongst friends who are also devotees and whose hearts are melted. And they're also thinking of Krishna. And that's their solace in life, is to talk about Krishna and remember Krishna constantly amongst themselves. And what's spoken by such person is called guhyam. It's confidential knowledge about Krishna. And by hearing that kind of information, which is a far cry from the Vedas, apyo panishadam, dure harikatam ritat. Dure means it's far away. This kind of talk, even though the Vedas, the Upanishads, are talking about the same thing, they're indicating Brahman, but this kind of talk, this guhyam akyati prichyati, it's a far cry from the Upanishads, what they're first starting to indicate, because it actually reveals the personality of Godhead. From the hearts of his loving devotees, they can reveal that. And in the case of many great devotees, this is how they approach Krishna. In the case of everyone, this is how we approach Krishna. We hear about Krishna from a devotee who has a particular sentiment for Krishna, an attachment for Krishna. And when we hear in that way, then we also become attracted to Krishna. One example is the wives of the Brahmins who were performing sacrifices when Krishna and Balaram and all their friends they spent the day in the forest herding the calves. But one day when the coward boys were complaining to Krishna, it's not right that we should go hungry. We're with you, and you know, why should we be hungry? So Krishna suggested that they go to a nearby home of the Brahmins who are getting ready to perform a yajna. And they're very serious about the whole thing. Everything has to be perfect and in place. And they were getting everything ready. And so Krishna said, go ask and in my name for some, actually asked, said, go ask in the name of Balaram, because he's higher than I am. and see if he can get some food. So they went and they asked the Brahmins, and what did they do? They ignored him. They didn't say anything. They didn't respond. They just kept doing them. They thought these are insignificant, and they didn't even consider the name of Krishna when they heard it. It didn't move them. It didn't move them at all. And here they were engaged in a Vedic sacrifice, but they had no feeling for Krishna, who is Vedaishcha Sarvarahameva Vedyo. He is the purpose of sacrifice. In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita, he says that I am sacrifice. And here they are performing a sacrifice, and they don't know Krishna, and they're not attracted to Krishna. And then the cowherd boys came back to Krishna disappointed, and Krishna consoled them. He said, when you go to beg, you can't get disappointed, because some people give and other people don't give, and that's just the way it is. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a couple of shlokas about Raghunath Das, when he first started to beg in front of the Simhadwar gate in Jagannath Puri. It's mentioned that if those who beg knew how hard it was to give, they wouldn't beg. And if those who were givers knew how hard it was to beg, they'd always give. There's a conundrum in the begging field. So Krishna told them like that. And then he said, okay, let's try again. But this time, go to the wives of the Brahmins. And so the boys went in, and this time they begged that Krishna and Balaram are nearby, and they're, you know, we're all hungry, and we'd like to get some food. What did they do? They immediately dropped everything. They were assisting their husbands in the yajna, and again, they were under strict disciplinary process for getting the yajna ready, but they, as soon as they heard the name Krishna, and they realized that he was nearby, and that he wanted something, they dropped it all. They didn't care for the Vedic yajna. They didn't care for their husbands. And that was a big deal, because we're talking about in a Vedic village where, you know, the women were sequestered, and, you know, if they went outside for one night, they were not eligible for marriage. There's very strict culture, and what it meant was a big deal. And these days, it might not be a big deal. It's like, just walk out, but, you know, back then, in that setting, it was a huge deal. It means really giving up their life as they knew it. But they didn't even think of that. When they heard the name Krishna, they immediately went out, and they brought all kinds of food, whatever they were performing for the sacrifice. They didn't care. They put it all together, a huge feast, and they came out to the forest, all of them, to meet with Krishna. And when they saw him in the forest, he embraced them within their hearts. He's there within the heart already. And when they saw him leaning against the shoulder of a friend, and he was twirling a lotus flower in his hand, and this was his broadcast to them that I'm turning your hearts in my hands also, like that. Many subtle meanings in how Krishna relates to his devotees, but it's very intimate. And they came out to see him, and they were melted with affection in seeing Krishna, and transfixed in seeing the beautiful form of Krishna in the clearing of the forest along with his friends. And they began to offer prayers to him. And they begged ultimately that they could stay in the forest, and that whatever flower garlands and things like that that others threw away after Krishna had given it to them, then they would keep those things, and they would simply stay in the forest, and they would keep even a distance from him, but they would serve him in that way. Ultimately, Krishna told them that they should go back to your husbands. And they said, but our relationship's ruined already. How can I go back? And he said, no, trust me, it will be repaired. They'll come to a position of knowledge and understand, and they will accept you. So they did go back. And those wives of the Brahmins, how were they so much affected when they heard the name Krishna, and that there was service to be done, and they had dropped everything to do it? They had previously, when they had gone shopping for the things they needed for the household, would meet pure devotees who were out selling things. Some of them were in the market selling produce and betel nuts and things like that, other things that might be used in puja. And as they were exchanging through barter and taking these things home, naturally, in the course of shopping, they would talk to these devotees, and the devotees would tell them about Krishna. And even they didn't, you know, reveal the Upanishads, they didn't start chanting Purusha Sukta or go through any kind of process, because the hearts of these devotees were completely pure and they loved Krishna. When they spoke to them, they became affected by that, and their love for Krishna awoke. And though they'd never seen him before, just by hearing about him from the devotees, their love awakened. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunai Shravanadi Shuddha Chite Kare Udoy. It's already there sleeping within the heart of every living entity, that is, love for Krishna. And Shravanadi Shuddha Chite, when one hears from the proper source, that vibration, it awakens that pure love for Krishna. Shushusho Shadadhanasya Vasudeva Katarichi Sian Mahatsevya Viprapunya Tirtanashevanat. Especially if one has association with Mahatmas, with devotees, and is able to render service, then very quickly that attraction for Krishna awakens. Attraction to hear about Krishna and attraction to perform service for Krishna awakens. Yes.
So the brahmanas who were engaged in the sacrifice, I mean, it's in the Varnashrama system, the sacrifice is meant for satisfying Vishnu, right, Prabhuji? So it's about, I think, just prioritization. They were satisfying Vishnu, but it's about giving priority to Krishna, isn't it? Or it's just like they were impersonalists, I don't know. So,
well,
because we also might be engaged in sacrifices, but...
Well, let me put it this way. Their priorities were all messed up. Because they had the wrong priorities. This is the point. One may perform some kind of ritual or yajna or something like that. But if one doesn't come to realize Krishna as the source of all those yajnas and the purpose for performing the yajnas, this is the point. And they realized that themselves afterwards when they said, to hell with our Vedic yajnas, to hell with all our rituals, to hell with our, you know, performing vows and all these kinds of things, because we weren't able to realize the purpose of it all, which is to serve Krishna. Whereas our wives, you know, they haven't done all these special tapasyas and everything like that, but they've realized it right away. And even after that, even after they had come to some kind of realization that Krishna was the purpose of all these yajnas, still they still were afraid of Kamsa. They weren't able to go out and meet with Krishna because they knew that he was not in favor with Kamsa. And they weren't willing to sacrifice their safety to go out and see Krishna in the forest, which shows that those who are able to do this kind of devotional service, in other words, where they spontaneously take to devotional service, or they drop other things to take to devotional service, as we were talking about earlier, tavat karma na kurvita nanirvidyeta yavata matkata shravanado shadayavana jayate. There's an adhikar. There's a qualification one must have in order to do this, what these wives of the Brahmins did, which was to surrender to Krishna, which is gotten by association, by Sangha. So we get our qualification for Shraddha and our advancement in devotional service through Sadhu Sangha. That's where it comes from. It's imparted to us. Of course, one time Srila Prabhupada was speaking with a gentleman who then said, he was arguing the other way, saying, but I can't surrender to Krishna because I don't have the adhikar yet. I don't have the qualification. So therefore, that's my excuse. But then Prabhupada turned it around and he said, if you were a person in debt and you needed money and I came to you with a bag with $1 million, and I said, here, I'll give you this for free. This is a gift. Then he said, all you do, your adhikar is that you take it. You just take the bag. So there is a way in which, you know, he presented that, you know, we have some free will to execute. And if we do that, if we surrender, then also we'll get the Adhikari. Did you have your hand up? Okay. And Rukmini is another example. She hadn't met Krishna before, but she had heard about Krishna. And therefore, she desired to be with Krishna and nobody else and wanted to marry him. So in this context, hearing from these devotees who are intimate devotees of the Lord, and this is how Krishna is revealed. Tarko apratishtanat, the Vedanta Sutra says, through argument, through logic, basically it's like a dog chasing its tail. You never really get anywhere through sort of logic and argument. There's no place to stand in all that. Until one meets a person who actually knows the Lord, who has a full knowledge. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadakshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshibi. Someone who's seen the truth, who's connected with it. Then one can understand the essence of life, which is to perform devotional service to the Lord. So priorities, everyone has priorities. Vedanti tatvavidas tatvamyaj jnanamadvayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdate. Some people prioritize Brahman, and they say that's the highest. And according to their position, itam satam brahma sukhana bhutya sakyam itam satam brahma sukhana bhutya dasyam gatanam paradaivatena mayashritanam naradarakena sakam vijaru krita punja punjaha. Shukadeva Goswami listed the different kinds of devotees, and according to their priority and their qualification, they, for instance, some are attracted to his impersonal feature, some to his majestic aspect of Narayan in Vaikuntha. Others, they're bewildered by the three modes of material nature, and they think this is just great, what we have here. What's wrong with this? But those who are the most fortunate, Sakam Virjaru, Krita Punya Punja, they have gotten the highest good fortune by accumulating heaps and heaps of this bhakti unmukhi sukriti, the real wealth of life, this sukriti which is based on bhakti. And therefore they're able to play with the Lord as friends. So, yeah, priorities are there, but, you know, we understand through association with those who have higher priorities and through their manipulation of Shastra or presentation of what actually is the highest. I mean, and of course, in every position, devotees feel satisfied as well. I mean, some devotees have relationship with Krishna. There are different relationships. You could say one's higher, one's lower on the base of rasa and the qualities that it has within it. But each devotee is fully satisfied within their particular position. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had extensive conversations on this. Well, of course, everywhere he went, read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll find that what's going on in every aspect of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, basically, he was defeating all the other conceptions of the Lord everywhere he went. The Buddhists and the Jains and the Muslims and the Mayavadis and everyone. And even when he met Sri Rangam, was Venkatabhata, you know, even there. And it started in a joking way. He was saying, so what's with your Narayan, you know, and Lakshmi? Lakshmi wanted to get into the rasa dance, but she couldn't get in, right? You know, and he was like, yeah, okay, you're the Supreme Personality of God. You tell me why, you know, she couldn't get in. And you know, then Mahaprabhu talked, Nayam Sukapu Bhagavan Gopina, Gyaninam Gopika Sutta. He gave this famous verse, Nayam Sukapu Bhagavan Dehinam Gopika Sutta, Gyaninam Chatmabhutanam, Yata Bhakti Matam Iha. which is repeated throughout the Chaitanya Charitamrita from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which says that one doesn't have access to the full form of the Lord unless he is in this mood of natural bhakti. This natural bhakti. Nayam Sukhapo Bhagavan. He's not easily attained unless one has this natural friendly love for the Lord, which is awakened only by association with pure devotees. You can't get it any other way. You can get Brahman realization by your own speculative power. Pantasu koti shatavatsara sambragam yo vayu adhapi manaso munipun gavanam. The best of all the munis, they can come up to this level, but they get only the tips of the toes, the glowing effulgence of the Lord's lotus feet. But to come up to the highest position, one has to have this guhyam akyati prichiti. This reveal, the secret, is there within the hearts of the pure devotees, because that's where Krishna resides. Sarvo hridayam mayam sarunam hridayam toham maranyat te na jananti na ham tebyo managapi. That's what Lord Narayan told Durvasa Muni when he was running away from Sudarshan Chakra. His back was being burned after he offended Ambarish Maharaj. And he went to Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha and he said, "Can you save me, please?" And Narayan said, "Devotees are everything to me. I'm in their heart, they're in my heart, and you offended a pure devotee. I can't help you. You have to go to him. If he forgives you, then we'll start thinking about it." That's how dear devotees are. Krishna says they're more dear to me than I am, than my own self. They're the most dear object of his affection in the world. So this is the process. By approaching a devotee, then one can understand who is Krishna, actually. And there's no other process except that, ultimately. So anyway, by understanding Shastra, we can understand what is the actual priority. Everyone's prioritizing it every minute, isn't it? According to my Shraddha, that's how I prioritize. One person I know, sort of a distant relative of mine, who's not involved with devotional service, there was some musician, I forget his name, he was a guitar player, and this person used to go everywhere that he went. He would save his money and his time off from work, and he would go there. What was his name? I can't remember. Like a classical. Oh, Otmar Liebert. Oh. Otmar Liebert, that was his name. Otmar Liebert. And so this person, they got it. His Shraddha, his priority in life, was to follow Otmar Liebert wherever he went. In fact, he had his autograph on a poster to such and such from Otmar Liebert. And I just marveled at the fact that that was his thing in life. Otmar Liebert was the thing. And I looked, I was like, that's the guy, huh? And, that was his priority. Everyone has some priority at some level. And it's based, Krishna says in the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, on your Shraddha. It's an active thing, faith. Active thing means you act it out, because you demonstrate it by how you move in the world and where you put your attention. It all comes from your Shraddha. And so if you get this kind of Shraddha from devotees, that there's nothing but Krishna, this is the thing. You know, Vrindavan's the place. Go to Vrindavan. You know, what do you want to go to Disneyland for? Go to Vrindavan. You know, once you have that feeling that you get from devotees, it's kuyamakyati prichati. They reveal it to you. You know, that you get it from their sentiment. That, no, come here, I'll tell you what the real thing is. Lord Chaitanya, you know. And then, you know, it starts to grow on you because of their association. And I remember one time, soon after I joined the movement, I was on a traveling Sankirtan party. And we were down in San Diego. And it was at the old temple. And they had, there was this, I guess it was upstairs. The temple was upstairs, and they had this pretty small temple room. And it was early morning Mangal Arti, and there was a few traveling parties that had come there, and there was a couple of sannyasis there leading the kirtan that I really liked. And it was like I got in there, Mangal Arti, and we were chanting before the deities, and like the world was perfect for me. You know, the devotees that I admired were there leading the kirtan. It was Brahma Muhurta hour. The deities were there. We were on traveling Sankirtan, and we were singing to Lord Chaitanya, and I was just thinking, this is it, you know. This is what else could there be? This is the best. And I was thinking, but it's private. You know, we're up here in this little place, and nobody else knows about this. It's so special and rarefied, that thing, you know, this secret of Lord Chaitanya that he's giving out to the world, and here's Radha Krishna, but who knows about it? But how did I get to know about it? You know, some devotee told me. So I heard about it, and I went there, and I saw it for myself. And, you know, I'm part of the cult now, you know. I'm in there. And so that cult of devotional service, you get it from those who are in it. You know, it's like a secret society. And you have to take refuge there. I gave an example before. I heard about like UFOs. You know about UFOs? You ever seen one? Well, some people have. You know, they'll see it in their backyard, and they come running into the house, and they say, I saw a UFO come out. And by the time they get there, of course, it's gone, right? And, you know, he looks for evidence on the lawn and everything like that. What looks like evidence to him looks like a bunch of malarkey to everybody else. So then, you know, he's so much agitated that he saw a UFO that, you know, he goes on the internet and he finds a UFO club. And he goes and joins the club. And he's like, I saw it. And he goes, I did too. Come on, you're in. And everyone else thinks, you're crazy. You know, don't tell him about it. His friends at work say, who else did you tell? You know, don't tell anybody else, or you're going to lose your job. You know, and so devotees become like that. You know, they've seen something, they felt this guyam, this secret thing that about Krishna and Lord Chaitanya, and then you know it becomes so special. They go try to tell everyone, go tell my parents, and they're like, "You're kidding me, right? You know, ISKCON, you're crazy." So many things can come up. So, therefore, you know, we protect our faith. We have an association of those of us who have, you know, become crazy. Lord Chaitanya used to say it to his associates, to Surup Damodar and Ramananda Roy all the time, that, you know, I'm a madman. And now you're becoming madmen also. And, you know, who can understand these things? In the last part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Mahaprabhu's in Puri, he's in the Gambira. He's in that little room. And at nighttime, they close the doors and everything like that. So he'd get up in the middle of the night out of separation for Krishna, pining for Krishna. He trying to get out in the middle of the night in this kind of madness of intoxication for love for Krishna. He rubbed his face against the wall. And then in the morning, they found that his face was bloody. You know, from grinding it against the wall, trying to get out. And they said, what did you do? You know, what happened? He said, you know, I wanted to get out to find Krishna, but I couldn't find the door. I couldn't find a way out. So then they put one devotee named Shankar Pandit inside the room at night. He would sleep in there, and he would put the Lord's lotus feet on him, on his body, and watch him all night so that he couldn't do anything. Because other times, too, he got out. Even though it was locked and there was no way out, he got out. And then they come looking for him. He said, he's out? How did he get out? The door's still locked. And then they'd look for him all over, and they found him in various places. They found him in a cowshed one time. And his limbs were, inside his body like a pumpkin. And the cows were there licking his body, you know, the transcendental scent of his body. And they were trying to move him away, and the cows wouldn't move. As of the scent of the Lord's body, they couldn't stay away from it. And in another time, when he was walking with the devotees, he just sort of wandered off and fell into the ocean. And there he was, floating, floating, floating. And all the devotees, they thought, now he's finally disappeared. He was nowhere. They couldn't find him any of the usual places all over Puri. So still, when you lose something very valuable, you know, your father gives you an emerald or something like that, and then the next day, you're getting out of the car in the parking lot and you lose it or something like that. You go crazy, you know, looking for it. So it's like the devotees felt like they lost the most valuable thing in their lives. They were looking everywhere to find him. So walking along the beach, then they saw one, this fisherman was coming along and he was babbling and waving his arms. He was crazy. And they said, we're looking for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's disappeared. And this fisherman, he was saying, I don't know, I was out fishing and I caught a dead body in my net. I'm out in these lonely places at night killing fish, and therefore I get ghostly haunted. And therefore, I always chant the names of Lord Nrisimhadev to protect myself. But tonight, I caught this body And when I reeled it in, I thought it was a big fish, and I touched it, saw it was a dead body. And then the ghost of this body, it must have been a Brahma Rakshasa, entered my body. And now I've become mad. I'm maddened by this ghost, and I can't, you know, I'm going to find an exorcist. So this is the preaching of devotees, you know, Sarup Damodara.
And when I chant my Nishrigadeva mantra,
it makes it worse. It augments it. It makes me go even crazier. So then Sarup Damodara is there, and he said, I'm an exorcist. You've come to the right place. So he said some mantras, and he slapped him like that and said, okay. And then, you know, the man became a bit pacified by this. And then he told him, he said, that's no ghost. He said, that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he said, no, I've seen the Lord before in town, and that's not him. He's different. He said, no, when he goes into ecstasy like that, sometimes his body goes through transformations. And he becomes different. You can't recognize him. So they went and retrieved this so-called dead body, which was actually the Lord in a trance of ecstatic emotion. And they chanted the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra very loudly. And he came back from this trance where he had been seeing Krishna. And he was very disturbed, actually, that he had come back into the so-called external realm. So these things are mentioned by Kaviraj Goswami as like inexplicable to most people. Like this verse, Dure Harikatam Ritam, it mentions that these ecstasies and things like that that come, you can't get those from the Upanishads, from understanding, I'm Brahman, you know, Tatvamasi, Soham, these kinds of utterances. You get them from the pure devotee of the Lord. Mahaprabhu is in Acharya Leela. He came as the topmost devotee of the Lord, and he was showing what's possible in devotional service. You know, what is the pinnacle of devotional service? So one has to prioritize and understand, you know, what is that? What is that thing? And we can do that because nana shastra vichara naika nipano said dharma samstapako. What is dharma, you know, and what is the actual swadharma of one's life? This is an endless topic for discussion. You can go through, everyone will give you some idea of what you're supposed to do, what your priority is supposed to be in life. But then when you come to the Goswamis, the topmost devotees, and they have compiled, by the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you read the Sandarbhas, it's exactly to prove the efficacy of Bhagavatam, that Bhagavatam is the ultimate, that it's the proof. It is the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, and it is the pinnacle of understanding of the Supreme. And all that's meticulously proven by the greatest, arguably the greatest scholar of who ever lived, Jiva Goswami. And all of it's given, why? For us. So that we have something to stand on, so that we can actually prioritize correctly. Because if you're able to do that, if you're able, tach chadadhana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya pashyantyatmani chatmanam bhakta shuta grihitaya, if you're able to, through the strength of shastra, and the good association to fix yourself towards this priority, then you'll fly to the moon. You'll be able to hit your target. Yanti deva vata devan pitrin yanti pitir vata bhutani yanti bhuteja yanti mam yajinopi mam. You have to know what your target is. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. But if you're fixed, if you have focus, we were talking about focus earlier on. Krishna says, Bahu Shaka Hyanantascha. If you don't have focus, then your attention is many branched. But if you're focused, Vyavasayatmika Budhir, Ekeha Kuranandana, you have got one thing on your mind, and that's Krishna Bhakti, Krishna's lotus feet. Fix your mind here, Krishna says. Go into samadhi on this one thing. Then everything's available to you in all perfection. So we take help from Shastra, Guru Shatra Shastra, and we fix our priority correctly to understand. And therefore, Siddhanta Bulya Chitana Kara Alash. We shouldn't be lazy also in understanding Siddhanta. That's why books like Prabhupada, it's amazing. You know, Prabhupada gave us everything. Sri Isha Upanishad is there. We have something from the Upanishads, and it's the perfect Upanishad for us to read to understand that Krishna is a person. Then Nectar Devotion, which goes through all the rasas and explains in scientific detail of how it is that pure devotional service is the topmost activity. Then you have a Bhagavad Gita, of course. You have Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, which further elucidates exactly how the life of devotional service is the topmost position. So, of course, ultimately everyone has to prioritize for themselves, but this is the progressive path of devotional service, is taking advantage of the association of intimate devotees and also understanding from Shastra, and then moving in that direction. And then pratyakshavagamam dharmyam, it becomes directly perceived by the person that there is no greater gain. This is the top priority. Life's all about prioritizing. You have to prioritize. Everyone's doing it at every second. Vishaya vinivartante nirahara sadehina rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishva nivartate. We prioritize, I would argue, and I believe the Shastra would back this up, based on what's in it for me, what's the best thing, what's the best thing I can get in this world. And from minute to minute, whenever I look at anything, I'll think, what's the best thing I can get out of this? And if there's two choices, and one, you know, there's not something in it for me, and the other one is something in it for me, A means something in it for me, B means there's not that much in it for me, which one will I choose eternally? A. But understanding, Shukadeva Goswami says that Krishna is the soul of our soul, atmanam akhilatmanam, that he's the source of our very self, and that serving him means that we're rotting the root of the tree, and that we're actually feeding our soul, that our highest interest, this is the revelation of those who are in full devotional service, is that by serving Krishna, I achieve my highest interest. Therefore, they don't want to do anything else. Why would you do anything if once you realize this priority, that by serving Krishna, that you achieve your highest interest in life, why would you do anything else? Why would you do, the only reason I would do anything else is because I don't understand the fact yet. I don't clearly understand it. That's why Shraddha is proved with your feet and with your hands. It's not something, oh, I love Krishna, have a cigarette, you know, or do something else. If you love someone, you're there. You're doing it. You don't have to say it. Like St. Francis used to say to his disciples, that you should teach all day long, and sometimes you should even say something. So Shraddha is like that. It means that if you have it, then you're already engaged in it because you've already prioritized. You've understood. That's your priority. You could tell by watching someone's life what their priority is, right? You don't have to ask them even. Just watch them. Say, what's their priority? What do they do? And I can watch myself and say, what's my priority? How much Shraddha do I have behind closed doors? What am I actually interested in when nobody else is around? And then I know. So this thing, it comes from those who have it. Bhakti begets bhakti. And once we have it, then our life becomes productive. Om Tat Sat. Hare Krishna. Any other things? A question, yes, Rakshit Prabhu.
When the sages say that they don't need anything because they are achieving their highest interest, then in that case, that interest must be their priority, correct? Means from some source they have learned that the highest interest is realizing the Supreme, or realizing, or self-realization. So they have also to know that interest, or have some way to know, yes, they have finally achieved it. And the other thing is that in addition to interest, they must also be getting some taste, like a higher taste when they reach that position, so they want to stay there and don't want to come down to something else.
That was a statement, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But the first was the question, that how do they know that they have achieved that highest interest, that they must have had some priority that the interest is to reach the Supreme.
In the beginning it's theoretical, but then bhakti parushanubhava virakti ranyata traishitrika ekakala prapadya manasya yatasnatastus tusti pusti sud apionugasam means that you experience it for yourself. Yam labam chaparam labam. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, And Prabhupada quotes it in this context all the time, that once you're there, you know it for yourself. And you think there's no greater gain. You're experiencing the taste. So, pramanais tatsaracharais tadabhyasa narantaram. In the beginning, we're taking on evidence of shastra, guru sadhu shastra. But we have faith. You can't even enter into the beginning path of devotional service without some shraddha. Adau shraddha means in the beginning there's that faith. It may be weak faith called komal shraddha. It's very tender. But still, it gives me the impetus to do what? Adau shraddha tata sadhusanga. That's it. Once you have some little faith, then you associate with devotees. But even before you have faith, Prabhupada explains in his lectures on the nectar of devotion that you get that faith, even if you don't have it, by agyata sukriti. Because walking in the world, there are devotees here, there, and everywhere. And if somehow or other you come in contact with one of those devotees, even without knowing it, and you do something, some kind of service, or have some positive contact, or maybe even it could be perceived as negative contact in the sense of that at first it may be even abhorrent to you, but still you have contact somehow. But you gain contact, and the devotees of the Lord are the agents who distribute bhakti. They carry the Lord within their heart. So by that agyata sukriti, unknown contact, unknown wealth you have, it begins to accumulate. And then when you have a sufficient amount, then shraddha, real shraddha, is born. And that means that now I have some kind of sentiment towards devotional service that other people don't have. And I'm eager to associate with devotees. And then from the association of devotees, one gets put in the proper path and follows the system of devotional service until one comes to the perfect stage. So in the beginning, I may not know anything, but by the mercy of devotees, then I'll get some wealth, and then I'll get some instruction, and by following that instruction, gradually there's levels of increasing faith. That's everything. Faith is everything. Shraddha siddhir bhavati tadrishi. That my perfection comes by the thickening, the increasing of my faith. Of shraddha. Shraddha is actually a real thing. It is what's, it's the real substance. It's what we're made of, really. Is that all right? Okay. Any last arguments or doubts? Yes?
It's maybe in the next class, but I have this question. I just thought I should ask. Prabhuji, you mentioned that in the association of the devotees and by serving the Paramahamsas, our faith gets strengthened. But what do we really mean by association? Because so many times these Paramahamsas give us so many opportunities, like we get so much association with them. But still, we see that the moment we are out of their association, we are like 90 degree, like opposite. So how does that serving the Paramahamsas really purify our heart?
Well, you know, having an association with a devotee of the Lord, even for a fraction of a moment, can give one impetus to go on a devotional service. And we know from, you know, Prabhupada's life that he didn't have that much association with his spiritual master even. But that's not the only kind of connection. The instruction as an example of the spiritual master becomes the life and soul of the disciple. What did Prabhupada take as his life and soul? Talk about focus. If you ever say Atmika Buddhir, he was a householder and his guru gave him some instruction, which was, Prabhupada was a householder, so he said, if you ever get money, print books. So what did Prabhupada do for the rest of his life? You know, even one time in Los Angeles, there was this devotee company called Golden Avatar, and they produced records and tapes and things like that. And one time they produced this record album. Back, you probably don't, you've never even seen one probably, but there used to be these things called record albums. They're made out of vinyl. They're flat, and they had a little hole in the middle of it, and you put it on, there was a needle that would go on it. You've heard of it? And then the record would go around like that. There was grooves in it, and that's what everyone played. So anyway, they came out with this record album that has some devotional songs on it, or something like that. Anyway, with Krishnakanti and another devotee named Karandar, they went to Prabhupada with this big idea how they were going to get this record going and sell it and stuff like that. And Prabhupada responded, he said that, yes, this is fine, as long as it does not decrease book distribution by even this much. And then he said it again. No problem, just as long as it doesn't decrease or interfere with book distribution by this much. So they, okay, Prabhupada, and they walked out and they dropped the project. So Prabhupada got that instruction from his spiritual master, if you ever get money, print books, and you should preach in the West. And what did he do? He focused everything into that instruction. Everything. And what came of it? Look what came of it. So, you know, you could take one little, you know, you take an instruction and you serve that instruction that you get from a Vaishnav, and then everything will come from that. It's our wealth in life. It's our wealth in life, the instruction. You know, and if you're not doing that, what good does it do to come before, you know, some advanced devotee and offer, you know, respects and flowers and yes, Maharaj. Like I told the story about Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who was the most exalted Paramahamsa, and he didn't want to be bothered by people coming to ask for Ashirbad and, you know, all kinds of things. So he'd sit in the stool field. The stool field in India is like, you know, you don't want to go there. It's like you avoid it, you know. So, but he'd sit there just so other people wouldn't come and bother him. But there was this one big landowner in Calcutta and a big magnate, and he was thinking, you know, I have everything in life except for a guru. I have the best of everything, best, you know, wife, best family. I have more money than anybody else. But what I'm missing? The best guru. So who's the best guru? It's that Gaurakishore Das Babaji. So I'm going to go there and I'm going to make him my guru. And when I do, then I'll have everything. I'll even have the best guru. So he went to Maharaj and, you know, begged him for initiation and, you know, and said, and, you know, I'll serve you in whatever way you want. And he's thinking that, you know, what could he want? He lives in a field. Maybe I'll build him a little house. That's not going to take a big chunk out of my bank account. And so Maharaj said to him, he said, yes, only one thing I ask from you. Sit down here and don't go home. And the man ran away from that place. So, you know, our intention to serve, we can be far. It doesn't matter if you go close and your intention is, you know, I want something for me. But you could be far away. But if you're in that service mood and you take the instruction, you know, like that, then that also, Shushushro Sharadhanasya Vasudeva Katadriji, Sian Mahat Sevaya Vipra, you're doing great service. You know, you do that great service, you'll be connected in that way. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Bhakti Vrinda ki jai.